welcome back to No Time for Neutral. I'm your host, Georgia Hawthorne, and this is Aaron, our data guy from the Montana Democratic Party. Andy's down with a bug this week, so send him your well wishes. Aaron, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Georgia. I'm super excited to be on the podcast this week. I've been with the Montana Democrats for about 6 months. I graduated from UNLV a few years ago after swimming in college. While I was in school, I was interning for Senator Tester in D.C., and after I graduated, I worked last year's elections with Wild Montana.
Nice.
When I'm not working, you can probably find me by the river. Don't be afraid. If you ever do see me, come up and say hi.
What were you swimming? Vegas is a long way away.
I was a 100 and 200 butterflyer.
I wish I knew what that meant, but I'll believe you. You picked a hell of a week to sub on the pod, because we have had an absolutely insane last, 12 hours?
Yeah, that's...
So after Donald Trump had essentially the biggest U-turn of his life, in the wildest couple of hours I've experienced in politics lately, the Epstein Files Transparency Act is now on its way to the president's desk. And if you would have asked me my opinion on that Friday, I would have told you there would have been no way in hell. And yeah. Now we're here. So Sunday evening, Trump gets on Truth Social and calls on House Republicans to actually support the release of the files, which is nothing what he's been saying up to this point. It's no, they're not real. They don't exist. They're a hoax. Yada, yada, yada. My thoughts... He knew time was running out on the issue. The government was open again. The petition had the votes. He knew that he could only kick this down the road for a little bit longer. And he knew that he was losing the issue. I mean, sexually abusing kids and being classified as pedophile is not usually good for public opinion, I'd say.
I can't say that that's going to be bolstering positive opinions.
Right. And so I think he kind of knew that he was stuck between a rock and a hard place here, especially with the evidence that came out from House Democrats last week. So him supporting the release all of a sudden, this is a major difference in behavior from him.
Yeah.
Considering last week, he was pulling people into the Situation Room. He pulled Representative Lauren Boebert into the Situation Room to talk about her stance and her supporting the original petition. And the sit room is where war decisions are made. This is the most classified room in America. And we're just pulling in random representatives to pressure them on votes.
Well, yeah, what else would we be using it for? And didn't I read something about Trump calling Marjorie Taylor Greene, of all people, to try and pressure her to side with him?
I mean, probably. Those two are in some huge fight right now. He has, completely disowned her, saying that, she's not a part of MAGA anymore, and that, she's crazy and part of the left. And, granted, don't get me wrong, Marjorie Taylor Greene is not a Democrat. I'm glad she's developing some morals.
Yeah.
I'm loving this arc for her. But it's not like she woke up one morning and was no longer a Republican. I mean, she's not a Democrat by any means, but I'm loving this morals arc for her. I'm glad she's developing a conscience and finally realizing that, what Trump says and what the party says is, not the end-all be-all.
It's almost giving, like Mitt Romney, Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And we've been saying for a long time that, it's going to take everyone. It's going to take a big, wide coalition to bring down Trump and his authoritarian buddies and such.
Yeah.
And we've said from the jump that that's going to include moderate Republicans.
I just wasn't expecting
me either.
Those of all people to be the moderate Republicans, I guess.
Yeah, me either. But it doesn't surprise me that he called her to yell at her, on her position on the Epstein files, because that's what's been driving this major split between them.
I mean, it's definitely not a good look on the president, that's for sure.
I'd agree. But we saw a House vote today on the petition. So the House has to vote on the petition to say, yes, the House as a whole would like to release the files. And then that bill gets sent over to the Senate. And then it goes through the normal process. If there's amendments, it goes back. If it passes in the Senate without amendments, it goes to the president's desk.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So this petition was essentially nothing more than to force a floor vote.
Okay.
Basically forcing the House to take action on an item of business because a majority of representatives signed on. So House vote was scheduled for about noon Montana time today. I watched it live. Really wild to watch live. I don't know if you also did, but watching the vote count come in, they have a 15-minute window to like go cast their vote. And I don't think it was until like the last minute that probably 200 of them were cast.
Yeah.
And I mean, granted, I don't know the logistics behind it or like how it usually goes or anything, but the whole time I was just like, guys, I feel like this is a really long time to wait. Like, I feel like this is a really easy answer.
Especially because they were going on about how it was going to be a unanimous vote.
I mean,
it was both sides talking. We saw speakers from both parties talking about this is going to be a unanimous vote when we pass this unanimously.
Right.
And then it wasn't.
Right. Like, it wasn't even unanimous. Vote count ended up being actually 427-1. Just one. There was one no vote. His name was Clay Higgins. He's from Louisiana. Shocker. He's a Republican.
Sounds like a stand-up guy.
Interesting take on his part. But yeah, so passed damn near unanimously in the House, gets sent over to the Senate. And I was definitely expecting there to be a delay on the Senate side. Generally, there is a delay on the Senate side when it comes to just about anything.
Yep.
Especially ahead of today, Majority Leader John Thune, he was saying that he wouldn't commit one way or another to if he was gonna hold a vote. Like, everything was dependent on how the House voted and so on and so forth. And with Thanksgiving so close, they're out for the holiday at the end of the week.
Right.
I was fully expecting the Senate to punt this until after Thanksgiving and then deal with it in December. That is not what happened. I watched the House vote, did some work, took an hour-long break to eat some lunch and not stare at the news.
Right.
And by the time I picked my phone back up, it was like, the Senate has unanimously passed the Epstein files. Like, vote. And I was like, I'm sorry? What? What just happened?
Do we live?
Yeah. Here I am thinking we have days, weeks, if not months, until we see a Senate vote.
Right.
And it happens in an hour? Odd. Really, really odd behavior out of the Senate. But I believe they used unanimous consent or something to that effect, which essentially says, we're going to pass this bill so long as no one directly objects. That's what happened. No one objected, and so it just kind of cruised on through the Senate, didn't even stop, did not collect $200, did not pass go, went straight to the president's desk, and that's where it's sitting currently as of 8 o'clock Tuesday evening.
So, if it passed unanimously through the Senate,
right,
and it passed unanimous minus one in the House, can the president even veto it at this point?
I mean, he could. There is nothing preventing him from outright vetoing it and sending it back to Congress.
And they would have to revote.
They would have to revote. And they would have to, again, have a two-thirds majority to pass
to
it.
Overturn.
To override the veto.
Yeah.
Now, do I think we would see that happen if the president did veto it? Probably not.
I mean, didn't he already say that he was going to support it?
I mean, he did. Granted, I at this point, this guy could tell me the sky was blue, and I'd question it. Because almost nothing that comes out of that man's mouth is the truth.
Well, yeah.
So, that is where it sits as of right now. Things could look a lot different by the time this episode goes up tomorrow. So, my sincere apologies if the news cycle goes nuts. But the question I've been asking all day is anyone else, like, really worried about this? Because
yeah.
I'm, like, genuinely, like, really uncomfortable and skeptical with the way this has completely flipped in 24 hours.
From the president's perspective, from going, you can't release this, hey, calling Marjorie, calling Lauren Boebert, calling mm-hmm. all of these different representatives, and demanding, almost,
right.
that they flip their vote, that they pull their support.
To not release these things.
And now, oh, I'm going to...
Everyone support it, I'm going to sign it. It's odd. I will say I also saw something online today. There's a clip of a guy who is supposedly Jeffrey Epstein's brother. Again, we live in the age of AI. We live in the age of technology. But it was on the news.
Yeah.
Supposedly Jeffrey Epstein's brother, and there's a clip of him saying that the government is actively redacting and wiping the Epstein files as we speak.
That might explain it.
I don't know. I don't know if we would ever know. I don't know if there is a way for us to know at this point. Like,
I mean, the actual text of the bill says that Congress must be informed 15 days after the release of the files.
Okay.
Of all redactions.
Okay, so say the DOJ takes the files and they do redact, say, hypothetically for no real reason, President Trump. They redact all instances of his name out of the Epstein files. If they were to do that, they would have to provide Congress with that notice and say, hey, we redacted Donald Trump's name for whatever reason they come up with.
Supposedly, if you're reading the verbatim text of the bill, now that is to say that it is the Trump administration, and
yeah.
do they have the best track record of following judicial and congressional orders?
No. Not at all. But yeah, so there's a whole lot of rumors, there's a whole lot of misinformation, and it is, the media landscape out there, especially around this right now, is hard. The only advice I really have for anyone is stay close to your trusted sources. That's what I'm doing, and I look at news for my job, so... best advice I can give. But Aaron, I think the thing that's making me the most uncomfortable and most Americans uncomfortable at this point about this whole switch up is that we are supposed to trust Donald Trump's Department of Justice when they release these files. That's who we're getting the files from. That's whose care they're in. That's who's responsible for them. And so, like, all of these rumors on top of the switch up, like, do not lend credibility to this argument. But also, I think the thing that's kind of been missing out of this narrative is that Donald Trump could release the files whenever he well wants to.
Literally right now.
He could release them right now.
The same way the Senate passed.
Or tomorrow. Or the day after that. Like, it's his DOJ. They're his files. Like, he's the president, they are a property of the government, and, like, for all intents and purposes, he owns them. He controls what happens to them. If he wanted to release them to the public, he could, and he would. But he's choosing not to do that, and so that, on top of this switch-up, on top of all of these rumors about DOJ and the FBI and so on and so forth, potentially altering these files before they go live to the public... is really concerning. This doesn't have to be a congressional decision. We did not have to jump through all of these hoops. We did not have to play this game.
Well, and that is to say that that's been the case for the past however many months, that they've said that they have been in possession of it.
Mm-hmm. Remember Pam Bondi's binder?
Yep,
on her desk. The Epstein files? Like, she took pictures with it? Like...
But here we are.
Yeah. Anyways, skepticism aside, I am extremely glad we saw some movement on this.
I'm excited to read them.
I am too. I'm really, really excited for the victims. I hope they do get to see some kind of justice out of them. I hope they get to leave the limelight a little bit.
Finally, yeah.
I think there's been a lot of attention on them as victims and survivors a lot lately, and like with reason. Like, they were the ones who were there. They know what happened there, and I understand like the curiosity. Yeah. There were a bunch of them sitting up in the gallery today during the vote.
Right, and they were excited and looked pretty enthusiastic mm-hmm. from the couple of shots on C-SPAN that showed them.
Right, I mean, they ran an ad on Monday Night Football yesterday encouraging, like, representatives and Congress and the American people to, like, join with them in, like, trying to hold these billionaires accountable for, like, some of the worst crimes out there. And so, yeah. Like, I am glad that we might get something out of this. By no means do I think in this moment that we are going to receive the full 100% untouched copies of the files. I think I'm a little too jaded to believe that at this point. But I do hope we see some names and some situations and maybe some criminal charges and actual jail time.
One can only hope, but...
Yeah. All right, well, now that we have covered pretty much every national headline from the last 4 hours.
Oh, boy.
We've got some Montana news. And the Montana Public Service Commission is back in action.
Yay.
It's always good when those guys are brought up. Because this week they're holding hearings for yet another rate increase for Northwestern Energy. That's all I need to know, frankly. Because these guys just got an increase in 2023. Yeah. They got a 28% increase in 2023. And if you remember right, everyone's bills went up like $50 a month that year.
Yes.
Like, people were forking out so much extra money a month for electric bills after this increase. And now we're here 2 years later asking for another.
I mean... It's just the cherry on top of perfect timing that we would do this the month after healthcare premiums are going up, SNAP is being not funded, and all of these other things that are also making people struggle to be able to pay their bills.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure, like, it's not like the PSC was like, oh, now's a great time to do this hearing. I'm sure this was scheduled out, like, months in advance, but I think it speaks to, like, the bigger system.
It's just
of like how it's always one thing after another. God forbid, like, you were a federal worker during the shutdown and like you missed a paycheck, maybe you missed two, and now your health insurance is going up, and like now they want to jack your energy bill up an extra $120 a month. That's crazy. That's wrong. And now they want to jack your energy bill up an extra $120 a year. Like, I don't.
It's not sustainable.
It's not. But what makes me more angry about this increase in particular, I think, is because the whole reason they're asking for this increase is to fund a $300 million methane plant in Laurel.
Oh.
Right.
I...
So, like, we're not even... Like, if it was $300 million for, like, some hub... To make, like, some renewable energy, like, eventually it was going to bring down costs, or, like, something along those lines, I could understand it a little bit more.
Even natural gases or something a little bit more, again, sustainable.
Right. But, yeah, so they want to pay for their $300 million fossil fuel plant in Laurel, and they want the rest of us to pay for it. And I can't say that I'm feeling all that hopeful about it. The PSC has a pretty good record of approving increases for utility companies, usually because it's all a bunch of Republicans that we elect there, because it's a very under the radar race. It's very niche and technical, and like no one wants to talk about utilities. But like these are really important positions, and this is the impact it has, because in October the PSC in early October, the PSC approved a rate increase for natural gas customers.
Okay.
For about 90,000 Montanans who use Montana Dakota utilities. So that's mostly folks who live over on the eastern side of the state.
Right.
But that increase is going to cost customers an extra $15 a month. And not that $15 is like an earth-shattering amount of money. But that is money to people. $15 is a couple of cans of beans or veggies or a pound of ground beef or something like that. And that's kind of what I mean. And I think what you're trying to get at too, when you say it's one thing after another, is that these rate increases, the point isn't that you're paying an extra $10 a month. You're paying an extra right. $15 a month. It's that someone in some way is always constantly asking you for more money.
Well, on the flip side of that too, there's always someone who in some way, that little amount of money, that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. How do you know that it's not the person living on Social Security
right.
who has a strictly budgeted monthly income amount mm-hmm. that they're working with?
Right. Like, these guys just don't understand that, like, most Montanans at this point in the game do not have extra hundreds, if not thousands of dollars just laying around on a month-to-month basis. Like, God, I wish.
Extra dollars, period.
Wouldn't that be nice? Like, but that's what I mean. Like, the utility companies want an extra $15 a month. The health insurance companies are now asking for, like, a couple extra $100 a month. The president wants you to pay an extra $25-$30 at the grocery store every week so that he can tariff the penguins on an island where no people live.
Right.
Like, so that he can run his crazy economic agenda. And meanwhile, the 1% in Montana and America is getting these huge tax breaks from the federal government, from the state government, and we're all just sitting here getting screwed.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else to put it other than our working people are maxed out. Montanans are way maxed out, and we've been maxed out for a long time. It's why the levees failed.
Right.
Earlier this year. It's why levees failed statewide. It's because working Montanans don't have the flexibility in their budget to pay for these extra increases, to pay to fix the school that the government is responsible for.
Right.
We just don't have this kind of stretch in our budgets anymore. Because Republicans are allowing the cost of living to get so high.
Right. And especially when the governor has $86 million sitting in general funds that could be used to fund all of those projects.
Right. And like, Lord, that's not even the general fund. That's just his like own little personal slush fund from all of his COVID money.
Right.
I mean, like, if we're talking the general fund and like money that legislators set aside, because this was the thing, there were a few Democrats who were considering calling a special session last week before the government reopened because Gianforte was refusing to give out SNAP benefits.
As they should.
And in previous sessions, legislators specifically designated this pot of money and said, hey, this is for when the feds don't come through and we need to take care of our people. That is what this money is for.
So what started happening on November 1st, right?
Yeah, and he was just like, yeah, no. I don't want to use that money. The feds might not pay us back. So on and so forth. But yeah, I think Gianforte's a great example to point to, actually. Because while he's been governor over the last several years, he's cut the top income tax rate twice.
Yeah.
Meaning that if you make more money, you pay less money in taxes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He falls under that top tax rate?
Nailed it.
That's what I thought. That's
Mr.
I thought.
New Jersey billionaire. But yeah, folks, I don't know. We've got to find some way out of this situation in which the billionaires, like Greg Gianforte, and the corporations like Northwestern Energy pay their fair share, because working Montanans can't do it anymore. And we won't do it anymore, while C-suite executives for those exact kind of places are pulling in record profits and millions of dollars. Well, in somewhat lighter news, I'd say, guys, there's no snow anywhere. It's the middle of November.
I was just getting ready for my first year back snowboarding again after injury, too.
What'd you do?
I tore my ACL and messed up my knee pretty bad.
Ooh!
3 years ago, yeah.
Ouch. Yeah, no, that sucks. But yeah, speaking of skiing, like, with the lack of snow, with how warm it's been, ski resorts aren't anywhere close to opening, and lifts were running this time last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was looking over at Lookout Ski Resort over near Missoula the other day because I was so excited for my first season back snowboarding, only to pull up the Summit lift cams, and there's not an inch of snow. Yeah.
Not an inch? There's not a flake. I don't know. I mean, I'm not necessarily complaining that it's, like, decently warm outside during the day because now the sun is setting at, like, 5 o'clock and I hate the time change. But, and I'm gonna break out the old Montana classic here. We need the moisture. And we need it now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm nervous for fire season next year.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a dry one.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Held v. Montana climate case. When all the Montana kids sued the state for not doing anything about climate change, they were like, hey, you guys are preventing me from doing things that I like.
Right.
Like skiing.
Like in the summer, inevitably, fly fishing when water levels are too low and we've got hoot owl all year round.
Or the smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
If it doesn't snow, we get a really bad fire season. Like, you're not going to be able to walk outside.
Yeah, you just migraine. Like that.
Anyway, y'all, I think that's all we've got for you this week. Don't crucify me here, but go Grizz, pray for snow, and we'll see you next week.